You think cults happen to the weak, the gullible, the broken. But I was none of those things. I was a scientist, rational, educated, respected. And yet all it took was one whispered sentence from a stranger in the rain, and something in me cracked open. I didn't fall into a cult. I walked in with my eyes wide open, because they made me feel seen for the first time in my life. This is how it starts. Not with fire. Not with violence. But with the quiet promise that your pain finally has purpose. And by the time you realize the truth, you're already holding the weapon. If you haven't already, make sure to follow us and tap the notification bell. We drop new content every day. Stay tuned so you never miss a story.
Terror in Tokyo Subway. Chapter 1, The First Whisper. I wasn't the kind of woman you'd notice on a crowded train. Most mornings I stood with my back pressed against the cold steel door of the Chiyoda line, eyes down, briefcase clutched like a lifeline. My colleagues in the lab called me efficient. My mother called me lonely. I preferred the term invisible. It was easier to survive that way. No expectations, no vulnerability, no need to explain why my apartment still echoed, why I cried when I smelled cherry blossoms, why my fingernails were always bitten raw. But invisibility doesn't make you immune. It just makes you ripe. It started on a Thursday. I remember because the rain had been relentless all week, soaking my hemline and my mood, the gray sky leaking into my chest like ink. I was 2 months deep into a research assignment on neurotransmitter disruption when Dr. Yanagida, my only mentor, was suddenly reassigned without explanation. One day he was there, humming Debussy at his desk. The next, his nameplate was gone, and my inbox was filled with unsigned directives. That same evening, as I walked home past the half-lit alley behind the university lab, I heard it. A voice. Soft. Intentional. You look like you're searching for something they can't give you. I turned. A man stood just outside the shadow of a vending machine, his suit pristine despite the drizzle, his hands tucked neatly behind his back. He smiled, not with kindness, but curiosity, as though he already knew what kind of void I carried in my chest. I'm not selling anything, he said before I could speak. Just offering a door most people are too afraid to see. I laughed awkwardly. I'm not religious. Neither am I, he said. But science has limits. And you know that, don't you? He didn't ask my name. Didn't offer his. He just handed me a pamphlet, printed on thick, expensive paper. No images. Just a phrase in crimson ink. Only those who suffer truly understand the path to transcendence. I should have thrown it away. I should have kept walking. But I didn't. Because the words crawled into my head like a whisper I'd been waiting my whole life to hear. The first meeting wasn't what I expected. It wasn't held in a shrine or an underground lair. It was in a clinical white room in an old office tower downtown. The windows were blacked out. There were no chairs, only cushions arranged in a perfect spiral. A dozen people sat in complete silence, eyes closed, breathing in unison. He was already there. Asahara. He didn't look like a prophet. He looked like an exhausted professor who hadn't slept in days, beard unkempt, robe slightly wrinkled. But when he opened his mouth, the room leaned forward like it had no choice. You are not here by accident, he said. You were summoned because you see. Because the world outside this room is a rotting husk, and your suffering is not a flaw, it's a signal. A preparation. He looked directly at me then. Not through me. At me. I felt something shift inside. Something terrible, and soothing. It's terrifying how quickly loneliness can be mistaken for calling. Over the next few weeks, I started skipping my morning train. I began lying to my supervisor, saying I had migraines, or that my mother was sick. The truth was less noble. I was attending lectures in a darkened room that reeked of incense and secrets. They didn't talk about gods. They talked about purity, about removing the toxins of the modern world, about how only those with the capacity to suffer deeply could help lead humanity into a new era. The man next to me, Daisuke, was a former physicist. He said he'd worked on military contracts. He said guilt made his bones ache at night, but in the temple room he felt peace. Purpose. It's not about death, he whispered one night as we packed away the cushions. It's about rebirth. We're not destroying anything. We're purifying it. I wanted to believe him. I wanted to believe that maybe my pain, my desperate longing for something more, wasn't a flaw. Maybe it was a sign. And so I kept going back. The first assignment they gave me was simple. Test a compound. Nothing dangerous, the handler assured me. Just experimental. You're a scientist, after all, we trust your expertise. The vial was unmarked. The liquid inside, translucent and still. I ran it through the usual protocols: spectrometry, toxicity, enzyme interaction. It was volatile, frighteningly so, but not unstable. The chemical signature reminded me of something I'd studied in grad school, a formula buried deep in a textbook no one quoted anymore. Sarin. But I said nothing. I wrote my report, omitting the most crucial observation. I convinced myself it was part of a test, a theoretical model, a scare tactic, nothing more. I didn't realize it then, but I had already crossed a threshold. Not with a scream, but a silence. That's how manipulation works. Not by force, not by chains, but by offering you exactly what you need, just twisted enough to own you. That night, lying in my futon, the city outside my window alive with neon and noise, I held the pamphlet under my pillow like a child hiding a diary. Only those who suffer truly understand the path to transcendence. The words no longer frightened me. They felt like scripture. They felt like home.